Hello there, dear audience, and welcome to a very exciting special edition of The Partial Historians. I am Dr. Radford, and unfortunately this slightly unwell person sitting next to me is Dr. Greenfield.
Good evening, listeners. Oh, or hello, or in your region, whatever the time may be.
Insert appropriate time greeting here.
Giving myself away.
That's right.
I'm ill, I'm sorry.
So today we're going to be taking a little bit of a break from the male rulers of Rome.
Phew, finally. Getting sick of all of that cough.
I know. We're going to be focusing on Julia. Yes, Julia.
Julia, yeah. Yes, but which one?
Yes, we're going to be focusing on Julia the Elder.
Julia Major.
That's right, Augustus's one and only child.
The one, the only. And I think this is like a special event as well because this is episode 10.
I didn't even know. I didn't get you anything.
I can't believe you forgot our anniversary.
Even though you're sick, I shall kiss you.
Oh, enjoy the joke.
Yeah. Okay, so why would we be taking a special break to look at Julia? I mean, presumably, being a woman, she can't have much to do with this ruling dynasty. Can she?
Yeah. You'd be surprised.
Yes. If we want to sort of briefly look at her family credentials.
We've established she's the daughter of Augustus.
Yes.
The only biological child in existence.
That's right. So she was born to Augustus while he was still just Octavian. Back in the day.
So we're looking at a birth date of around 39 BC.
We think, yes.
Yeah.
And this was by his wife Scribonia, the one he left quite unceremoniously once he discovered there was a woman in existence called Livia.
Turns out he likes pregnant ladies.
Yes, he does. So this would be his only child. And therefore, she became quite important dynastically. And I mean, this is the whole thing. We're dealing with such a new institution here, you know, with the Principate. And so when Augustus realizes he's not going to have any heirs of his own.
It does take quite some time for that to happen.
Of course, yeah, of course. But, you know, yeah. give it time. But she ends up playing quite an important role. I mean, it's really because of her that the dynasty survives at all, I think we could say.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, and we sort of, it's important to keep in mind that the women aren't not useful to elite families. I mean, it's all about who marries who.
Yes, and this takes on more importance when you've got, like, essentially an imperial family.
Yeah, well, we have what is essentially, I suppose we could refer to Augustus's family as a proto-imperial family because it's very much in development and he's making it up as he goes along.
Yes.
But he does seem particularly interested in keeping it in the family.
Absolutely.
And his interest in doing so becomes clear in the way that he deals with Julia, his only daughter.
Yes, absolutely. So first of all, obviously, he has to find a suitable husband for this child of his.
Gentlemen, check out my wares.
That's right. And so her first husband is a man named Marcellus.
He's not really looking very far for a husband at this point in time. He hasn't really gone out of his way going, who would be best suited?
Yes.
Let me canvass around. He's really kept it in-house.
Yes, because Marcellus is actually the child of his sister, Octavia, by her husband, Marcellus. God, these names. They're going to get confusing.
Yeah, so this is like cousins getting married.
Yeah. It doesn't last very long, unfortunately.
Marcellus is a sickly young man.
He is, unfortunately. I mean, he does seem, you know, Augustus does seem to intend to do some fabulous things with him.
Yeah, Augustus does seem to have his sights on Marcellus as being a potential heir it depends on who
yeah,
you're
I mean, early
to.
Stages.
Scholars argue about this, and the thing is that Marcellus just dies too young for us to really know for sure how much he was being primed for this.
Absolutely. So, he was roughly, you know, he wasn't ridiculously old, ridiculously young, around Julia's age. But unfortunately, their marriage—I don't think it even lasted a year, did it?
It was only like a sort of a couple of years, and then he sort of carks it.
Yeah, pretty much story wrapped up right there.
Done and dusted.
Yeah, so where is Julia going to go to next?
Yeah, well, she doesn't have any children from the marriage with Marcellus, so her fecundity has not been proven.
Mm.
Augustus doesn't look very far for the second husband either, as it turns out.
And she may have been a little bit more disappointed with this second choice. Maybe not. But maybe. Because Augustus chooses a man who's much older than she is. I mean, not that that's that unusual, I suppose, in Rome. It's not out of the question.
How many dollars does he have?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, no, I'm not imposing modern values.
Yeah. And so he chooses his very, very dear friend, Agrippa.
Mm.
Someone who's been by his side for a long time by this stage.
Yeah, these two are old friends. Agrippa is not really the elite sort of stock that you would expect for a patrician like Julia. But nevertheless, it's a very productive marriage.
Yes, and I mean, Agrippa, to give him his due, I mean, it's really thanks to Agrippa that Octavian, Augustus, whatever you want to call him, is in the position that he's in some ways. I mean, Agrippa essentially, you know, won the battle back to him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Agrippa's been carrying a heavy load of the military prowess of this duo. So, you know, and his reward is... Hello. Julia.
Yeah.
It would seem.
She seems like fun.
Well, I mean, whether she seems like fun or not is totally irrelevant. I mean, the fact is that she ends up having 5 children with him.
Very impressive.
So, I mean, they're married in 21 BC.
Yep. And that basically she ends up producing a couple of sons, a couple of daughters. Well, three sons, two daughters. All good, looking very promising.
Yeah, well, Augustus takes a real shine to a couple of these.
Not so much the last one.
Well, mostly because he wasn't born when Augustus was taking a shine to the other two, so...
True,
So these are Augustus's grandchildren, essentially.
Yes.
And these are the ill-fated Gaius Caesar and Lucius Caesar.
Yes. They seem so primed to, again, fill the void.
Oh, look, and he propels them early on, before the age restrictions, through political positions.
Absolutely.
And it's clear that he's showing them remarkable favour.
Yes.
In doing
to
this.
The point where some people have suggested, I think, that this is one of the reasons why Tiberius gets up with everything.
Yeah. What? These younglings?
Yes. I mean, because they're essentially teenagers, you know.
They're kids.
Yeah, they're very young. Especially when he does things like, I think he adopts them when one of them's, you know, about a year old, you know.
So Augustus takes these grandchildren, adopts them as his own children. Yes, they're still biologically Julia's, but now in terms of the line of succession, which appears to be rapidly evolving with these two, unfortunately they die young.
Yep.
Both of them.
Yeah, they die in around, one of them, Gaius dies in about 4 AD and Lucius dies in about 2 AD. It's not...
That dream dies.
Yeah,
very early on.
Very quickly, it all goes downhill. Agrippa Postumus, which is the last of Julia's sons, never seems to fill the same position. We're not really sure what was going on with him.
And he's called Agrippa Postumus because he's born after Agrippa has died. There is a small lag there. So he's coming quite a bit after
the rest,
the other two. So he's probably seen as too young. And he seems to be given some favour.
Yes, but...
up to a certain point, but this is really retracted after Augustus dies. So
absolutely, yeah. Well, and he's killed.
Yeah. Really retracted. By retracted. Yeah. I mean, somebody did him in.
Yes. He never gets quite the same look in as the rest. Augustus is once again obviously casting about for another husband for Julia after the death of Agrippa, which leaves a real void in
his... So Agrippa dies. Yeah. Sad face.
It is sad face.
Julia is now husbandless again.
Yeah. And also just for Augustus, this would have been more of a personal tragedy, I think, than the death of Marcellus, in the sense that Agrippa really is someone he's been relying on for a lengthy amount of time by the time Agrippa passes away. And so there is a void, you know, personally, politically...
And the trouble is that from Julia's perspective, it's not clear that she's necessarily keen for a third marriage.
Absolutely. I mean, this is just...
She doesn't get a lot of say because...
Yeah, this is just Augustus thinking ahead, as usual.
Yeah, Augustus is pater familias. Yeah. He gets to make those choices.
He's been ruling for more time now as well, you know, by this stage. And so, obviously, for him, marrying her off has... real political, you know, significance. Like, it, as the time goes by, it becomes even more significant because his power has been, you know...
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's becoming more and more entrenched as it goes along.
Absolutely. So essentially, when you're marrying someone to your only daughter, you are giving them, you know, sort of the political nod as well as just a personal...
Yeah, you're pretty much saying, like, you're the son. Yes. You're the surrogate son for this situation.
Yes.
And the third marriage is to Tiberius.
Yes, which I think we mentioned last time.
This is all in-house.
Yeah. It did not work out particularly well. It doesn't get off to a bad start exactly.
No, the sources tend to suggest that they got along quite well in the beginning, despite Tiberius being upset about having divorced his previous wife marry her.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but, you know, those sort of difficulties aside...
Yes, exactly. I mean, what we as far as we can see, Julia did things like accompany Tiberius to his provincial command in Illyria.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, you know, so that's a bit of
supportive.
Bit of togetherness, you know.
Do you want to go east?
A little bit of eastern delight. Yeah, so it seems like, you know, things aren't going too badly. And when Tiberius returns to Rome, Julia gives a dinner for him with Livia, his mother.
Oh, that's
nice. And you know, her mother-in-law, therefore. So things don't seem to be going too badly, but then... Sort of, it seems to indicate that things start to go badly when Julia has a miscarriage, and then there's the death of Drusus as well, which seemed to really affect. I don't know whether it's just affecting Tiberius or whether it's affecting both of them, but
yeah, is there something in what is happening? So to clarify, this Drusus
is... Who is this Drusus?
Who is this Drusus?
This is 9 BC, the death of Tiberius's beloved brother, Drusus.
Mm.
And this is something, I don't know if we stress this enough in our Tiberius episode, but this is really something that hits Tiberius hard. I mean, he actually escorts the ashes back to Rome, apparently, on foot, which That's is a
huge,
long way.
Yeah, a huge show of brotherly respect.
Absolutely.
Mm.
So, yes, that's when things start to, it seems, maybe not go so well. The couple start to drift apart.
Yeah, up until the point where then Tiberius decides that he's going to retire to Rome.
Which apparently is Julia's fault. Partially, anyway.
Well, yeah, that's what the sources say. So Tiberius sort of gets up and is like, that's it. I'd rather live in Rhodes than stay around here a moment longer.
So, of course, this leaves Julia in a bit of a difficult situation in the sense that she is still married. Augustus isn't permitting a divorce between these two. So she's kind of having to live like a widow, but she's not a widow.
Mm.
So she can't look around for a new husband exactly.
But that doesn't stop her looking around.
No. This is where she runs into difficulties perhaps. Because basically, in order for, you know, a Roman woman enjoys a certain amount of social freedom, particularly when we compare them to, you know, women in Athens and that sort of thing.
Mm.
But a lot of that social freedom for a Roman woman comes from being married, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a sort of a respect accorded to married Roman women, which is very different from unmarried Roman women. They have a greater sense of freedom
to
conduct themselves. And presumably she would have retained this, but it would have been an odd situation
without
Tiberius there.
Yeah, it just been awkward.
Yeah, because it's not like... you could invite gentlemen over to your house, even if you knew them.
Yes.
Because it wouldn't be appropriate necessarily to have those men there, even if they were family friends, if the husband wasn't home.
Yeah. It's just a little awkward, a little weird.
How do you get together with the ladies?
Yeah.
If the men aren't there.
Yeah, and I mean, of course, unfortunately, we don't really know a lot about how Julia lived during this time, because, of course, when with Tiberius away... and therefore she can't have any babies.
Logistically,
she's not having any babies. Her political role is therefore sort of minimal in this time, you know, minimalized, I should probably say. And so we don't really know a lot about her life during this period until...
Wait for it. Dun, dun, dun.
I think it's time for a collective gasp. The scandal.
What? A scandal?
That's right. In Augustus's own house.
Just can't handle this sort of drama.
I know. And, yeah, so basically it's a bit of a weird thing that all of a sudden sort of hits out of the blue. In that Augustus announces, this particularly big year for him. He's just accepted the title of, you know, Pater Patriae, father of the country, which is a big deal. You know, he's had a big year.
Yeah. It's been a political win.
Yeah. It's all looking all good. Yeah, it's looking promising.
But there's about to be a taint
Absolutely.
Upon his house.
Yeah, so in about 2 AD, I think, you know, the sources have pinpointed it, Augustus reveals that he has discovered that his daughter has been an adulteress, basically, in quite major terms.
Yeah, well, one wonders, first of all, how did he discover it?
Yes.
How long had it been going on before he discovered
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
And really, how do you go about dealing with this sort of situation as Augustus? Because yes. he finds himself in an awkward position where he's, like, the first man in Rome, and yes. now he's the father of the fatherland.
And, you know, we've talked before about how Augustus introduced, you know, during...
Moral legislation.
Yeah, particularly focusing on things like adultery.
Yes, and the time between remarriages and all of this sort of thing. So Absolutely. He's got this whole plan about how Roman society should work, and then all of a sudden he's presented with... Uh-oh.
It's on my own daughter. Ding dong. Everyone's calling.
It's like, Julia, I love you, but what have you done?
Yeah.
this is a huge PR problem
yes.
for Augustus.
And I mean, it's all, everything about it is just really weird, quite frankly.
Mm.
Because Augustus basically writes to the Senate telling them what's happened.
Dear Senate.
Yeah.
I've discovered my daughter might not be... Anyway.
I can't say it.
I can't go on. Meet me at my house.
Yeah, so apparently, you know, the sources dwell on, you know, his rage and his grief at discovering her deception, but at the same time, the accusations are still, you know, it's handled in a really bizarre sort of way in that there's no official trial or anything like that.
No, there's a whole bunch of speculation and yeah. rumours and, you know, some names are dropped, some base men that she may have been with.
Maybe,
and,
yeah.
and they're sort of thrown about and...
The sources say that she was up to things like not just committing adultery. No. That wouldn't do for our Julia. No, we're talking about things like, you know, particularly bad behaviour in the forum.
Anything that gratified her desires, apparently.
Yes, and, you know, obviously that raises the question, why on earth would she want to get up to mischief in the forum and at night when she could have just gone to the house of someone or other?
Well, yeah, and part of the speculation that surrounds this, one of the schools of thought, is that Julia is doing this precisely because she wants to attack Augustus.
Absolutely.
Do it in public. Yep. Do it in the forum.
Hurting
Make
goodness.
Sure there are witnesses. Yep. Why not? I mean, this is the guy that's pushed you around for all of your life.
Yes.
And frankly, you're sick of it.
Yeah, exactly. So is this her trying to get back at him, or is this something more sinister? Is this a conspiracy?
Well, that's another possibility.
Yeah, because her
Does
lovers,
she have supporters?
Yeah, her lovers are not all base men. In fact, one of them is the son of Mark Antony, Augustus's old rival.
Mm.
And so there has been speculation that, you know, is she conspiring to overthrow Augustus? Which, again, you know, you have to question, obviously, the like, you know, whether this is likely.
Well,
given that, you know, her children, you know, is she thinking of her children in this instance?
Certainly or? One of the ways that you could try and sell it if you were Julia
yes.
would be to say, look, I am the only biological relation of Augustus.
I am directly
linked to this guy.
Yes.
If you want to step into those shoes of power,
yes.
the best way you could do that
is through me. Absolutely. And so, yeah, there is all this speculation, but essentially what ends up happening is that Julia is exiled.
Mm-hmm.
She is sent far, far away, and some very strict regulations are put in place by Augustus to make sure that she...
You're never allowed to return.
That's right.
You shan't be buried in the mausoleum.
No. You can't drink any wine. You can't have any male visitors at all.
Fortunately, at this point in time, Julia's biological mother, Scribonia, who's been in the background all of these years,
yes.
Politically, but yes. probably not in a personal sense,
of course.
Steps up to the plate and says, Julia, I'll go with you.
Yeah, which is really quite touching, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, there's some the mother support there makes for an interesting sort of balance
yes.
to the way that she's treated so negatively by
Absolutely.
Augustus.
And so we're kind of left with all these questions as to... you know, what Julia was thinking, what she was getting up to. I mean, the sources obviously, you know, sort of generally take the male point of view, you know, in that they, they talk about Augustus's disappointment and all that kind of stuff. But we do have a couple of sources which give us a little bit more insight into her personality. You know, famously, I think I've mentioned this many times, but I'm going to mention it again. I love it. We've got sayings in Macrobius where Julia is asked by a friend how she manages to produce children to only produce children that look like their father, Agrippa. And Julia retorts, they only take on passengers when the cargo's already loaded.
Yeah. You know, keep it happening, guys. Like, yeah, so she's organised with her style of adultery, apparently.
Apparently, yes.
Although quite witty.
We have other stories where Augustus saw her dressed in a risque outfit.
That's unbecoming.
Exactly. Well, he doesn't say anything, you know. But then the next day she's dressed quite modestly and demurely, and he expresses his approval of this new outfit.
Mm.
And Julia says, well, you see, today I'm dressed for my father. The other day I was dressing for my husband.
Wink, wink.
Oh, yeah.
Father, you should not have been watching.
Yeah, exactly. So this is, I suppose, picking up perhaps on the good time girl.
Yeah, and she seems to have been quite witty and clever as well.
Yes.
Like, there was another account is that she was at the gladiatorial shows, and Augustus has sort of pointed out that Livia is sitting with old distinguished men, and perhaps she should consider doing the same, being part of the same household.
Mm.
And Julia sort of points at the young men around her going, when I'm old, they'll be old too.
Yes, exactly.
It's
yeah.
like, whatever.
Yeah. I've thought this through.
I know what's going on.
Yeah, here, I mean, because this is a girl who has essentially been, you know, at the heart of, you know, this new political system for a long time. And she has had to suffer numerous dynastic marriages.
And the thing is that she must have a good idea about how things work.
Exactly, yes.
So, so she's got a good idea about how to pull people's strings as well.
Yeah, precisely. unfortunately, although the restrictions regarding her exile are made a little less harsh as time goes on, she's never really allowed to return to Rome or the life that she once enjoyed. If she thought that Tiberius was going to ease her burden, she was mistaken.
Yes. Well, yeah, she kind of made a rod for her own back with that one a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, we do end up with a sort of a sad situation, really, where Julia doesn't have the opportunity to redeem herself in the eyes of Augustus.
No.
She stays out in exile in various locations.
I mean, you've got to hand it to Augustus. If this whole story is true, then he really followed through with his own his own laws, didn't he?
Well, he kind of had to take it a step further because...
Yes, he had to set the example.
Yeah, it wasn't... Those sort of punishments weren't necessarily the punishments that were due for the sorts of crimes that she was accused of.
No, but he certainly, you know, sets the standard and says, I'm not going to tolerate this kind of behaviour. In fact, I believe that, supposedly this is one of those anecdotes which come out of this whole affair, that one of Julia's slaves committed suicide because she was worried that, you know, she'd be implicated in her mistress's bad behaviour. And Augustus says that he wishes he were the father of this particular slave girl rather than Julia.
Oh, ouch.
I know. Gosh.
Snap.
Then, of course, the other, I suppose, side to this, which is equally puzzling and somewhat ironic, is that one of Julia's two daughters, Julia the younger, Julia Minor, ends up
She goes down a very similar path.
Yeah,
it would seem.
She really does.
so I mean, Julia Minor is the one that's famously associated with the exile of Ovid.
Yes,
in 8 AD. So there is a sort of a disturbing continuity between mother and daughter on that particular front.
Absolutely.
And so there is a sort of overhanging legacy of Julia Maior's life and the way that she lived it.
Absolutely, because it's not that much further after the elder Julia's disgrace that her daughter is also disgraced.
Mm.
And at the same time that she seems to have been exiled, Ovid was also exiled, and it seems, you know, for some sort of mistake that he made, which has led people to believe that mistake might have been Julia.
Oh, yes. And Ovid's mistake in the elusive way that he talks about it makes it so difficult
to be able to pin it down to anything.
People continue to argue about that today.
Yes. So I guess we'll leave you on that sad note, but after contemplating the raunchy and bad behaviour of the two Julias under Augustus.
And the train wreck, really.
It was a train wreck.
That Augustan sort of, the Augustan age sort of reaps upon certain women of its own house.
Absolutely, yes. It sends a message loud and clear, I think.
Yeah, be Olivia or don't be anybody at all.
Exactly. All right. Until next time, adieu.
Farewell.